Chase Acuna here, welcoming you to 1 Corinthians 7 through the Word. Today we're going to be moving into a new portion of the letter. Apostle Paul becomes Pastor Paul as he addresses a number of questions the Corinthian church had asked. Since Paul had just finished teaching about sexual immorality, he jumps into questions most on point, questions about marriage and sex. Verse 1. Now for the matters you wrote about, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But since sexual immorality is occurring, each man should have sexual relations with his own wife and each woman with her own husband. Paul had already written to the Corinthian church before, and so here the church tries to sum up Paul's teaching on sexual immorality. But they went actually beyond what he said. It is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. So the church in Corinth thought that complete abstinence would be best. Here's some of the irony, though. The same church that accepted sexual immorality so bad that the pagans rejected it somehow also believed that total abstinence was the most holy way of life. Anyway, Paul agrees to a degree with the Corinthian summary, but with reservations. Let's jump ahead to verse 27, because I think this will help us understand this entire chapter better if we read it first. Verse 26. Because of the present trial, I think that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you pledged to a woman? Do not seek to be released. Are you free from such commitment? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned, and if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Paul called for the Christians in Corinth to remain as they are due to the present crisis. So what exactly was the present crisis he's referring to? There is some disagreement on whether Paul was referring to some specific persecution in Corinth, or if this was a more general statement referring to the coming day of judgment. Based on other passages in the Bible, it seems very possible to me that Paul was speaking of a current crisis that was happening in Corinth. In 1 Timothy 4, Paul says that forbidding people to get married is actually a demonic doctrine. Also in 1 Timothy and in Titus, Paul commands elders in the church to be married men, and Ephesians and 1 Peter give commands for married couples. So although overall Paul did think it was better to remain single, there's nothing wrong with being married, which as a married man who loves being married to his bride, I'm so thankful for. In fact, back to the Corinthians question. Paul says because of immorality, it might be better to be married even with the persecution happening. And in that marriage, the husband and wife are supposed to enjoy mutual marital affection. Verse 5 gives us the reason. Do not deprive each other except perhaps by mutual consent and for a time so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come back together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. I say this as a concession, not as a command. I wish that all of you were as I am. But each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. Satan will do everything to encourage sex outside of marriage and everything to discourage it within a marriage. But Paul says that abstinence in a marriage can be a good thing for a limited time. Don't miss the key word here, merry friends. It's like fasting from food. A short time is good, but don't go too long as that can lead to temptation. Okay, enough about sex. Let's talk about divorce. If it was better to be single, should a believer divorce their spouse so they can be single? Paul says, absolutely not. Verse 10. To the married, I give this command, not I, but the Lord. A wife must not separate from her husband. But if she does, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and a husband must not divorce his wife. Before we dive any deeper into the issue of divorce, I want to address why Paul talks about the difference between his command and the Lord's there in the passage. Paul may not have been fully aware of how the inspiration of the Holy Spirit was working in and through him when writing, but Paul had already told them that he had authority in the church as an apostle. So when he makes the distinction here, he's referring to the fact that Jesus did not teach this command, but the fact that he is, and this still made it authoritative for the church. Now back to divorce. Paul commands believers to remain married, but if they do separate, they're not free to remarry. There are issues that justify separation, but there are only two reasons given in the Bible that allow for divorce and remarriage: adultery and abandonment, which Paul will address in a few verses. Verse 12 first. To the rest I say this, I, not the Lord, if any brother has a wife who's not a believer and she's willing to live with them, he must not divorce her. And if a woman has a husband who's not a believer and he's willing to live with her, she must not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband has been sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife has been sanctified through her believing husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but as it is, they are holy. So what about a believer married to a non-believer? Surely then it would be okay to leave a non-believer, maybe remarry another believer? Wouldn't the unbeliever in some way corrupt or defile the believer? Paul says it actually works the other way. The unbelievers in these marriages are set apart by God, sanctified, Paul says here, for a special work of the Holy Spirit. 1 Peter 3 says, "Wives, in the same way submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives." Non-believers married to believers have a chance to see a changed life firsthand in the life of their spouse. Back in 1 Corinthians, Paul also mentions that the children of believers, even if just one believer, are holy, again, set apart for God. The unbeliever in the household does not defile the children. God's blessings are not confined to the believer only, but extend to the entire household. So does that mean they're saved? No, but it does mean that God has placed that set-apart unbeliever in that relationship for a reason. But if the unbeliever leaves, let it be so. The brother or sister is not bound in such circumstance. God has called us to live in peace. Or how do you know, husband, whether you'll save your wife? But what if it's the non-believer who decides they cannot live with the believer? If they leave, Paul says that the believer is not under the bondage of that marriage. But if they remain, the believer has a chance to lead them to Christ. Paul then uses the rest of the chapter to discuss a few additional points on marriage and singlehood. Single people, Paul says, have more time to devote themselves to serving God. This is true. While single, a person can go anywhere to serve and be more singly focused. The married person also has to consider their spouse when making life decisions. Also, marriage is a gift. And a Christian marriage also provides unique opportunities to serve and be a witness for the Lord by the way that we love and serve the other as a reflection of the relationship that Christ has with His church. So the important thing for us to keep in mind in either season is that we are called to live, serve, and bring glory to the Lord. And that's how Paul closes this section, admonishing the church in this. Verse 17. "Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God has called them. This is the rule that I lay down in all the churches." So God works in all stations of life. Whether married, single, divorced, remarried, or widowed, the Lord has a calling for you and a work to do in your life. So wherever you find yourself today, you're called to serve God there. That's it for today. Go and read 1 Corinthians 7 and join us tomorrow for chapter 8 on Through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.